KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm Michael Krasny. President Donald Trump tweeted on Saturday that he has complete power to grant pardons. New Communications Director Anthony Scaramucci addressed the tweets yesterday.
The truth of the matter is that the president's not going to have to pardon anybody because the Russian thing is a nonsensical thing.
Coming up on Forum, we'll look at what might be behind the pardon talk, as well as other political news, including Jared Kushner's closed-door questioning by the Senate and House Intelligence Committees. That's all next, after the news. Welcome to this morning's Forum program. I'm Michael Krasny. In a statement earlier today, senior White House advisor and son-in-law to President Trump, Jared Kushner, released details of his contacts with Russian officials, including one previously undisclosed meeting. But he maintained that he did not collude or have improper contacts with any foreign government. Kushner put out the statement ahead of his closed-door appearance today before the Senate Intelligence Committee. Meanwhile, The Washington Post reported last week that White House lawyers were researching the president's pardoning authority in light of the investigation into the campaign's connections with Russia. White House officials have dismissed the story, but the issue was clearly on the president's mind on Saturday. He tweeted that he had complete power to grant pardons. But how far does that power really go? We'll delve into those legal and political issues in this hour. And joining us to sort all this out is Jennifer Epstein, who's White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. And we welcome her to the program. Good morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you on. Also glad to have Josh Meyer back with us, senior investigative reporter for Politico. Josh Meyer, welcome back to Forum.
Thank you very much.
And Professor Brian Kalt also joins us this hour. He's professor of law at Michigan State University, author of Constitutional Cliffhangers, A Legal Guide for Presidents and Their Enemies. Welcome, Professor Brian Kalt.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Let me begin, if I may, Jennifer Epstein, with you. And let's begin by talking about Jared Kushner, who is going to be testifying before a closed Senate committee, which I presume is going to involve a lot of Senate aides who are lawyers grilling him. What can we expect from this, particularly in light of the statement that he put out?
We can't expect to hear all that much out of this. This is part of the investigation, the way that the Senate staffers do hundreds or thousands of interviews as part of the process and then inform where the investigation goes next. What's clear from this written statement, 11 pages that was released early this morning, is that Kushner doesn't believe he did anything wrong. He thinks that the interactions that he had with Russians, which now total four as of this disclosure, all kind of add up to just the things that anybody who has kind of a liaison role, as he had during the campaign, during the transition, would have had with people who are powerful in Russia. He doesn't see anything wrong with that and doesn't think that there was any kind of, help or collaboration
or collusion.
Yeah. I think that seems to be a bit in the eye of the beholder and seems to be sort of where a lot of the deeper investigation is happening. Is not just, okay, you have these interactions, but what actually happened in these meetings, or the expectations on both sides. And, even if you didn't willingly think you were colluding, was that what the Russians were trying to do in their meeting? Is one of the big questions. He is going to make a statement later this hour outside the White House. We're expecting it. I don't think he'll say very much. I think he'll probably say, some summary of, no collusion in front of the cameras, but that then you'll be seeing that on TV for days and weeks and months and maybe even years to come.
Let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say there wasn't any collusion. This was all innocent, four meetings and so forth. But there was also the attempt to set up a back channel. And moreover, there were a lot of omissions on security forms that he filled out. There are many people who are saying he should not have a national security clearance.
Yeah, that has become one of the many rallying cries of Democrats around this issue, is that if nothing else, he at least has made it look like he is hiding something, even if there's nothing for him to hide. When you have these additional rounds of amendments to your disclosures, and they just happen to be around the sensitive subject of Russia. That's the kind of thing that gets investigators concerned and gets Democrats to see kind of some political points to be scored here. So this has been one of the many things that they've been calling for. The White House thus far, you know, has either said, you know, his security clearance is fine, or we won't discuss security clearances. It's not something that we ever discuss. You know, depends on the day which answer you get from them. But, you know, what's clear is that you're going to continue to see Democrats try to, you know, pull out thread by thread from his story and from his explanation of why what he didn't do was wrong. That you're not going to see all that much aggression from most Republicans.
And again, Jennifer Epstein with us from the nation's capital is White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. And Josh Meyer is also in Washington, D.C. this morning. He's senior investigative reporter for Politico. Over the weekend, Josh, President Trump took to what he calls his voice again, Twitter. He said, "I have complete power to pardon." And that would presumably include his son-in-law, but also he includes himself as well as members of his family or anybody else. His lawyer, Jay Sekulow, disputes that this means anything, and also other attorneys have said, and so has Scaramucci, his new communications head, this is just the president being theoretical. In fact, Scaramucci said that he brought up the whole question of pardons with President Trump. So is he just looking at this theoretically, or is he setting something up here? What's your sense?
Well, I mean, Michael, it's sort of impossible to really tell what's going on with these guys. I mean, this is sort of a familiar pattern by now, which is that they say something is hypothetical, or just that they're, you know, sort of thinking things through, and then they become reality later. And also, I've noticed by parsing the statements that they've made that, you know, they'll say, well, I did not discuss this with President Trump, or something very narrowly worded, which doesn't mean that they didn't, that we have not talked to him about a specific aspect of this. So it doesn't preclude the fact that pardons were discussed in some way, and then other people that work for Trump were left to deal with the details. So, you know, I just don't believe for a second anything that these people are saying, with all due respect, just because of the track record of them in terms of sort of constantly changing the narrative. So it's clearly on the table. I mean, I think the one thing that you have to look at first and foremost is what the president of the United States himself is saying. I mean, it's sort of remarkable that that the historical record will be, via his tweets. That's what's coming right out of his mouth, not what his handlers and his spokespeople and his entourage are saying.
His outside counsel claimed that he told Reuters, that's John Dowd, this is just a smear job. There's this stuff on pardons is nonsense.
Right, but I find that hard to believe when the president himself is broaching the subject. So, I think that these people are constantly scrambling to try to contain the fallout from what President Trump is doing in his own tweets and other statements, I think. And, we'll just see what happens with it. But, if that does happen, and again, there's been a series of instances where we think a certain thing won't happen, and then it does. I mean, if it does happen that they start pardoning people preemptively, or even pursuing the possibility of doing that, I do think it's going to take this to a whole another level. It brings in the question of whether the FBI and the special counsel, Robert Mueller, could and would continue to investigate, and the congressional committees as that's going on. So there would be sort of almost a circus mentality to this above and beyond what we've already seen.
Well, one also has to ask the key question here, whether a lot of this is being orchestrated to essentially undermine or dismantle the power of Special Counsel Mueller. I mean, there has been certainly a good deal of talk about investigating his background. You know, did he give money to Eric Schneiderman? Did he give money to Hillary Clinton, which, of course, President Trump did as well? But all kinds of things that are being brought up here. And now we have the chief legal officer, Jeff Sessions, essentially being described as beleaguered by the president, and the president apparently lacking some confidence in Sessions, and also information coming out about Sessions talking to Kisilev, which goes against his testimony. So we've got a whole lot to unpack here, and really a great deal of concern, I think, on the American people about what it's all going to mean.
Right. I mean, I was at the Aspen Security Forum over the weekend, where literally every important current and former national security official was in attendance, including the Director of National Intelligence, the Director Dan Coats, the former one James Clapper, CIA Director Mike Pompeo, and Obama's CIA Director, John Brennan. And so, these stories were breaking as we were there. And so we would run to, talk to these officials about them. They would be asked questions about them at panels and so forth. It is almost a surreal atmosphere. I mean, the allegations about Sessions are extremely serious. I mean, this would be the second or third, I think, or maybe even the fourth time where, the sitting Attorney General of the United States is having to, confirm or deny that he was untruthful in his comments about his dealings with Russian ambassador and perhaps other people during the election when he was a top advisor to Trump. So, that's one important aspect of this. Another is whether or not they're considering firing the special counsel. And as has just recently broken, they've floated the name of Rudy Giuliani as the attorney general, even though we already have an attorney general. So,
let me go back to you, Jennifer Epstein. What do you make of all this? It's particularly in light of the fact that the president expressed almost seemingly out of the blue that he perhaps should have done something about the fact that Jeff Sessions recused himself, and he expressed a great deal of regret over that and so forth. It almost seems like Sessions is being set up here, doesn't it?
Yeah, there is a sense that that the president certainly is not happy with his attorney general, kind of regrets the choice. I was actually in this brief event with the president this morning. He was taking photos with about 100 plus White House interns, and another reporter shouted out to him, "Are you going to fire Jeff Sessions?" And he kind of made this kind of goofy, smirky kind of face, hard to kind of explain it. It was just sort of like a dismissal of the question, but not of her asking the question, but not of the question itself. I think if you had confidence in your attorney general, you would just say yes, I'm not going to fire him, or something like that. I have confidence in him, can go a long way. The president chose not to answer it that way. So that was pretty striking, and it maybe doesn't mean anything, but it's hard not to read into it a bit when the president a few hours ago was calling him beleaguered, and last week certainly seemed to be pressuring Sessions quite a bit to resign. But it seems like Sessions for now is kind of pushing back and staying in his job and, kind of daring the president to actually fire him.
And again, Jennifer Epstein is at the White House. She's White House correspondent for Bloomberg. Let me bring Brian Carlton to this. He's professor of law at Michigan State and author of Constitutional Cliffhangers, A Legal Guide for Presidents and Their Enemies. And since the president put it out there Saturday and said he has complete power to pardon anybody, including himself, let's talk about his, power to pardon himself. I mean, it's certainly come up as a major constitutional question. We're in kind of a lot of legal gray area here, aren't we, Professor Call?
We are. There's no precedent here. There are arguments on both sides. When he said he had the complete power to pardon, that sort of begs the question of what that complete power encompasses, though. And while the power to pardon is extremely broad, the one gray area is whether he can pardon himself, and Nixon considered it. He had his lawyer look into it, and his lawyer said he could. The DOJ that would have been prosecuting him, Department of Justice, looked into it and said, no, he can't pardon himself. So the last time it came up, there were arguments on both sides, too. The simple argument that he can is that the Constitution doesn't say anywhere specifically that there's any sort of exception for pardoning himself.
When there's a special prosecutor now investigating, say, somebody like Michael Flynn, who President Trump wanted, according to James Comey, to have a lot of heat taken off of, and wanted actually, according to at least the testimony given by former FBI Director Comey, wanted President Trump to essentially let Flynn go. Now, Flynn could be possibly prosecuted. They've been talking about a deal with him. Could the president say, I pardon Flynn, and that's it? The special prosecutor can't go ahead with the prosecution?
Well, that wouldn't stop him from investigating. It would stop them from prosecuting Flynn, but at that point, Flynn would become unable to take the Fifth because there'd be no way his testimony could incriminate him if he had been pardoned. So if the ultimate target is the president, pardoning his subordinates doesn't help. The only thing that could help would be if he pardoned himself and if that worked. Now, I've argued, I've been writing about this for decades, I've argued that the president should not be able to pardon himself. That's just how I would vote if I were on the Supreme Court and the case came up. But I'm not on the Supreme Court and the case hasn't come up. And the arguments that he can't are a little more complicated, even if I think in the end they're more compelling.
Well, I've been reading people like Jonathan Turley, a George Washington law professor, who says the textual meaning of Article II supports president's right to pardon himself.
Yeah, there are people on both sides, and they say with a fair amount of certainty that he definitely can or he definitely can't, and the truth is we don't know. The argument that he can't is based on two main things. There's a textual argument, which is a pardon has to be a pardon. So we have to look, what is a pardon? Even if the Constitution doesn't have an explicit limit on self-pardons, maybe a self-pardon wouldn't be a pardon. Maybe a pardon has to be, inherently has to be something that you give to someone else. And just as another example of an implicit limit like that, you can't pardon someone for something they haven't done yet. You can't say, I pardon you for the crime you're going to commit next Tuesday. And the Constitution doesn't say that explicitly, but it's inherent in the definition of a pardon that it's referring back to something. So for a self-pardon, that would be the argument.
Again, Brian Kalt is professor of law at Michigan State University, author of Constitutional Cliffhangers, a legal guide for presidents and their enemies. Let me go back to Josh Meyer, senior investigative reporter with Politico, because, Josh, we also have to talk about this sanctions bill that now is, well, we're getting some mixed messages again from the White House, perhaps not so surprisingly. On the one hand, Sarah Huckabee Sanders says the president will not essentially oppose it, although for a while he was apparently in opposition, and so were some business people. The way it was written, though, it went past the Senate 98-2. That is with stronger sanctions against not only Russia, but also North Korea and Iran. And now we also heard over the weekend from the new communications director that, well, this is still maybe up for grabs. What's your reading?
Well, I mean, you know, she said we support where the legislation is now. That's something that she said yesterday. She also said that previous versions of the bill contained provisions that eroded the president's power to conduct diplomacy. So I'm getting it's hard for me to get a sort of a good fix on exactly where they are in this. I think it's a moving target, and I also think that they're trying to sort of downplay the political fallout from them wanting to push for something so hard and congressional Republicans opposing it. I mean, I think this would be a big defeat for them, especially because the White House and Trump himself have never really articulated why they want to oppose sanctions against Russia in particular, when it seems like that they're warranted for, and that Congress, including the Republicans, are for them. So it just also adds to the narrative, I think, of people being suspicious of why this president is so supportive of Russia and Vladimir Putin, and why he's opposing efforts to get tough with them. So I think that they're trying to figure out exactly what to do with this as it moves along. So I think we'll have to wait and see.
Well, let me hear your thoughts about this, Jennifer Epstein, because for once Congress seems united. I mean, there's a nonpartisan, disproportionate feeling that this veto-proof congressional bill, and it is veto-proof, really, at least the way it's written, should indeed go through. How do you read it?
Yeah, so I've actually been asking the White House about this for the last couple of hours today, and it sounds like Sarah Huckabee Sanders had one message on TV, and Anthony Scaramucci went out there and kind of made it sound like the president would not be supportive of this bill. The White House pointed me to a very short line in New York Times's sanctions story in which it says that Scaramucci responded by text message and said, listen to what Sarah has to say, which basically means the administration is now expressing support for the bill that has been worked out just over the weekend between the House and the Senate. We still haven't definitively got an answer of will the president sign this. I would expect that to continue to be a question. That to be a question in the gaggle that'll be on Air Force One today and at a briefing in the future until we get a definitive yes or no. But yeah, you know, this is probably going to pass, you know, almost unanimously, which would put the president in a tough position where he would definitely be facing a veto-proof majority if he were to attempt to veto this. So, you know, probably better from the standpoint of, you know, do you have anything to hide on Russia to not even try to veto this, if even if there were temptation to do so because of the president's, you know, whatever's pulling the president on Russia and at least at a less nefarious level, just the fact that, that this administration seems to be trying to work with Russia and cooperate and adding more sanctions is certainly not.
Well, Congress is sending a message to Putin, I think, aren't they?
Yeah. They're saying don't mess with the U.S., don't mess with our 2018 elections, don't mess with 2020. This is just, I think, a first step. I think we'll see more from the Hill because there are huge concerns about what Russia could do to the electoral process going forward.
And this bill, the way it's written, would prevent a unilateral move by the president to remove sanctions. But if he did decide to veto it, one would assume that Congress would just override the veto.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's quite clear that he would have enough vote. There will be enough votes in both the House and the Senate to do so.
Jennifer, I know we have to say goodbye to you regretfully, but I thank you much for joining us this hour. Again, Jennifer Epstein is White House correspondent for Bloomberg News, and I thank you for being with us. She joined us from the White House, actually, and we're going to invite you to join us. In fact, we would like to hear from you. We're talking about a range of things, about the testimony today by Jared Kushner and what can be expected about that, about sanctions, about pardons, about really a whole roundup of things, and would like you to weigh in and like to hear what you have to say. Also talking broadly about the ongoing investigation into possible collusion with Russia. If you have something you'd like to add to this conversation, or if you have a question or comment, let me invite you to join us now. Our toll-free number is available. The number to call is 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls, so again, feel free to call us now, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. 866-733-6786 is the number to join the program. You can also join the program by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, or, of course, you can go to our Facebook page. We do want to hear from you, so feel free to let us know what's on your mind and your thoughts about all that we're discussing or individual things that we're discussing. Like I said, that include the Kushner testimony today, sanctions, and, well, the statement by the president that he has complete power to pardon. Josh Meyer is with us, senior investigative reporter with Politico, and Brian Kald, professor of law at Michigan State University, author of Constitutional Cliffhangers, a Legal Guide for Presidents and Their Enemies. When we return, we'll hear from you, our listeners. Stay tuned. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're discussing a range of issues that, frankly, dovetail with each other and that are ongoing and certainly in process of unfolding in many ways. Let me go right to your phone calls and we'll begin. Deborah, with you. You're on the air. Morning. Deborah, one more time. Are you there?
Hello. Hello.
I'm sorry.
Hello.
Do I have...
Hello. Michael.
Hold on there, Richard. We got some mess up with the phones here. But let me go, actually, before I go to Richard, go to Brian Kald, because I want to get Deborah's question out here. And Brian Kald, again, is a professor of law at Michigan State. She wanted to know about pardons. She said, by definition, pardon involves two people. She's certainly right about that.
Well, this hasn't been tested. I think there's a very good argument that a pardon inherently does involve two people, but the only exception to that would be a self-pardon. The court hasn't ruled on that, and they could say, what they would say is, maybe you look it up in the dictionary, you look at the Latin roots, there's reasons to say that, but the Constitution gives the president the power to pardon because he is the president, and he's making a policy judgment about who is worthy of a pardon and who is not. And the check on that is through impeachment. So under that reasoning, a court could say if he thinks it's the right thing to do, he can do it, and then they can impeach him for it if they disagree. Now, again, I don't like that argument. I think that it is inherently bilateral, but until the court says so, it's really hard to say that it's definitely so.
All right, and now we'll hear from Richard. Richard, go ahead, please. Richard, are you there?
Hello, Michael.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Constitutional professor from Michigan, is this argument akin to plea bargaining and the power to plea bargaining cases charged or uncharged? And on the opposite part of the argument, is in support of him, his argument, Lord Mansfield, a person can't be a judge in his own case.
Yeah, Professor Cald.
Yes, I'd like to take that second point first because I've been talking about the textual argument, but the second main part of the argument against self-pardons is this venerable principle in the law that no one can be the judge in his own case. And I think if the court were going to say that the president can't pardon himself, they would rely very heavily on that. On the other hand, there are examples where courts have allowed presidents to do things that might look a bit like self-dealing. In every other instance, if you're a judge and you're accused of a crime, they would have another judge do the trial. In the case of the president, they can say, well, there isn't another president. There's only one president at a time. And so maybe in this one case, they would carve that out. But again, I do agree. I think the principle that you can't be the judge in your own case is a very good one.
I think it would be grounds for impeachment, and I think it would also, some say we're in a constitutional crisis already, but it would certainly be a foreboding likely or a harbinger of that. What about the argument, though, Professor Cald, that if you accept a pardon, you're essentially admission, it's an admission of guilt, whereas some say if you accept a pardon, it has nothing to do with guilt.
Well, I've seen this argument a lot, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to respond to it. There's a 1915 Supreme Court case where, if you take it out of context, the court seems to be saying that if you pardon someone, you're necessarily saying they're guilty. That's not what the case said. It was sort of an aside in a different part of the argument. Basically, what they're saying is they were comparing pardons to legislative immunity, and they were saying, well, you know, typically pardons are like this, and it's true. Typically, pardons are for guilty people. It's to forgive guilty people. But they also do include the power to exonerate people. It's rare, but presidents and governors have used the power to declare someone completely innocent. So politically, it would be very difficult, except maybe among his base. But legally, there'd be no reason why the president couldn't say, this investigation has gone off the rails, this is completely bogus, none of these people have done anything wrong, I have the power to stop this, and I'm going to use my pardon power to stop it. And legally, he can do that.
Let me go to a comment here for you, if I may, Josh Meyer. This is, and again, Josh Meyer is with us from Washington, senior investigative reporter for Politico. This is from a listener named Jeff who says, Ms. Levinson called Jared Kushner's failure to be honest on his security clearance as an opportunity to score points for the Democrats. Does she not think this violation of the law is actually a threat to U.S. national security? If not, why does she think all others are required to reveal this information truthfully? Now, unfortunately, Jennifer had to leave us, but he's asking a question about Jessica Levinson's argument. And get some thoughts from you on that, Josh Meyer.
Yeah, I mean, actually, Michael, that was a subject that came up a lot over the weekend at the Aspen Security Forum, and it's completely unanimous, which is rare, I think, in these circles. I think that everybody agrees that that somebody who has made the kind of mistakes and failure to disclose that Kushner has should not have a security clearance. I think that even the director of national intelligence said that, or one of the top officials, you know, that it certainly should be at least investigated, or the former director, that it should be investigated and put on hold until they clear up the questions about it. But, you know, these are some serious issues here. And, you know, the whole purpose of security clearances is to make sure that the people don't pose a threat to the national security, either by being blackmailed, by having financial interests that can be compromised, and things of that nature. So, yeah, everybody is scratching their heads as to why Kushner still has one. A lot of people wonder why he got one in the first place. I guess the president has the, you know, the authority to do that. It came out this morning that Kushner said that he blamed one of his assistants for some of the issues with his security clearance, saying that there was a miscommunication. But again, you know, I think that really strains credulity because, you know, they've had to update this several times. He forgot, what was it, many millions of dollars in assets and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, I think that this needs to be investigated, and the fact that that it hasn't raises questions about, you know, the three branches of government and if there's any real check on what's happening at the White House.
President Trump is saying again that Hillary Clinton needs to be investigated on Russia, particularly the uranium deal. And I think he's expressed some dissatisfaction again with Attorney General Sessions for not following through on that. You remember all the talk during the campaign about locking her up,
right,
and the like. Let's get your thoughts on that, Josh.
Well, I mean, the uranium deal is something that we all looked at very carefully during the campaign. Personally, I'm all for everything to be investigated. There's a lot of issues that came up during the campaign on both sides, or all the different sides of all the different candidates, that I think bear more investigative power. I mean, the Clinton Foundation, you know, I think the email server has been somewhat fairly thoroughly vetted. But sure, I mean, I think that it, you know, it's probably something that could bear, you know, the disinfectant of a good, you know, scrubbing. But, you know, it pales in comparison by orders of magnitude to the allegations against the Trump administration. And it seems clearly to be a diversionary tactic. I'm not sure that anybody except for Trump's, you know, biggest supporters, you know, would look at it as anything except that. So, I mean, I, you know, I wish he were showing the same level of concern about the allegations of what's going on with his administration and his campaign staff.
And let me remind listeners that we're talking about a number of ongoing stories. Jared Kushner testifying today behind closed doors to a Senate subcommittee, and also the pardon statement of President Trump, which has caused a firestorm over the weekend, saying that he has complete power to pardon, and also the sanctions bill, which I want to ask you about, Josh Meyer. But before I do, again, remind listeners that you can join us and weigh in on any of these topics that we have broached here and that we are looking at, we hope, in depth. And let us know your thoughts. Our toll-free number, again, is 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. Or if you have something you'd like to say or ask, you can also join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We expect on the sanctions a bill by month's end, but it does not affect those pipelines from Kazakhstan or from Russia into Germany. So there's been a kind of at least acknowledgement to, I guess you could say, environmentalists or something with respect to Russia as well. And is there ongoing consideration, Josh, about those two compounds to Russia that were taken by Obama back in December?
You know, it's hard to tell what they're doing. Again, I don't mean to sound so skeptical of what they're doing and saying, but, you know, there hasn't really been much visibility as to what they're doing. Again, over the weekend at Aspen, it came up. I think former CIA director John Brennan and former DNI director James Clapper both said, I think one of them said, you know, there is no reason on earth or no earthly reason for them to even consider giving them back to the Russians, especially without any kind of something in return. But that doesn't mean that they're not doing it. I think it would, you know, raise some questions as well. You know, and I'm still interested in finding out what was going on in compounds. I think Brennan said, you know, that clearly that they were listening, you know, listening posts, not sort of places where Russian diplomats could go to take a breather from the stresses of Washington. So, you know, I don't even know who's there now, whether we've thoroughly scoured them for, you know, listing, you know, technology. I'm sure that has happened. But that is another issue. And I think the pipeline issue is another very important one, too. I think that's something that really needs more sort of, you know, more information to come out for the public to sort of know what's going on.
And since you mentioned John Brennan and Jim Clapper being at Aspen, I wanted to also mention that they both endorsed a law that would require regular disclosure to Congress of foreign cyber intrusion that would potentially, of course, poison U.S. elections. So something significant came out of that. And they both apparently, and I read your reportage on this, Josh, which was really quite excellent, both upset about comparisons that Trump has made between intelligence agencies in the United States and Nazis, and talking about what an honor it was to meet Vladimir Putin. But let me bring more listeners into this, and let's go next to Wynn. Wynn, you're on.
Thanks. Congress is in the middle of investigating this Russian nonsense. I'm amazed that they've chosen, in the middle of this discussion, to propose some legislation. And I'm secondly amazed that they're coming to almost unanimity. Is this something that we can hope that will happen in the future?
Are there rays of hope in this? What do you think, Josh Meyer?
I think that that's it's a good question. I think that anything they can sort of create some sort of unanimity in Congress these days, given the bipartisan rancor and everything, is a good idea. I think that especially now that as they're heading or trying to head to their congressional recess, I'm watching and waiting to see what happens. But I don't think we're going to see much too quickly. But you never know. Things could change overnight. So.
And let me get back to pardons for a moment with you, if I may, Professor Kalt. And again, Brian Kalt's professor of law at Michigan State University. Stephen writes, and I wasn't aware that this was omitted. He says Professor Kalt was describing two arguments for why a president could not pardon himself. He never got to describe the second argument. Could we hear that, please?
Yeah, the second one was the point about that people can't be the judge in their own case. There are other arguments, too. I've written an article about this, about 30 pages long, back in the 1990s, and there's a lot of history there as well. If you look at the debates in the Constitutional Convention, they talked about things. It's almost eerie to read about this, given the accusations flying around now, but they said they were talking about maybe restricting the pardon power and not letting the president pardon for treason. And someone said, well, you know, maybe there'd be all these traitors there. Maybe the president would be one of them. Maybe the traitors would be working for him. And so we should restrict the pardon power. And the response was, no, we need to give this broad power. And if the president is in that situation, then the remedy is to impeach him and prosecute him. And so they were very comfortable with the idea that the president was getting a power that he might abuse in much the way that people are worried about right now, and the remedy is political. You impeach him and you prosecute him. Now, of course, that view carried the day, and they said, yes, that's how we should do it. We shouldn't restrict the pardon power. We should impeach and prosecute if he abuses the power in that way. If they thought that he could pardon himself, they wouldn't have been perfectly happy to let him do that with the idea that they would just be able to prosecute him later. Because if the president's leading a band of traitors and pardoning all of them, there'd be no reason he wouldn't pardon himself. But they must have thought he couldn't because they gave him that power anyway.
Well, apropos of that, I'm looking at a comment here, Brian Kalt, from a listener named Gene, who apparently is making a comment like a lot of comments we're getting along these lines. He says, wouldn't a self-pardon set up the possibility for an authoritarian government since the president of the United States essentially becomes above the law?
Well, again, the remedy is impeachment. The president, most people have looked at this, believe the president can't be prosecuted while in office anyway. So this is really an issue about what would happen to him after he's president. It would result in injustice to some degree, but I don't think that it would make him able to get away with whatever he wanted. There are important limits. First of all, he would be risking being turned out of office earlier through impeachment. Second, there's the possibility of state prosecution, which is an important check, and many of the allegations flying around are things that could also be pursued by state governments. And third, if he uses his pardon power corruptly, that itself could be a crime. So if he pardons for in exchange for a bribe or as part of a conspiracy to obstruct justice, that can be prosecuted. And because you can only pardon things that are already done, if the pardon itself is a crime, then you can't pardon yourself for pardoning yourself. Or if you do, then that's a crime. Eventually, his time runs out. And he could be held accountable in that regard. So there are a lot of reasons not to do it if you're the president. And it would be a bad result, but we have some good remedies to that.
Okay, let me bring another caller in, and that's James. James, welcome to the program. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question was kind of related to this sort of thing. Is that not, if he pardons himself, which, like you said, like a crime has to be committed in order for him to pardon himself, if his oath of office, if the whole point of his job is to be the head of the executive branch of the government and execute the law, isn't he violating his one job as president to uphold the law by pardoning himself?
Yeah. Brian Call.
Well, the pardon power leaves it in his discretion of who to pardon and who not to pardon. So, for instance, when President Ford pardoned President Nixon, President Nixon was guilty of crimes. I don't think there's any question about that. If they had gone ahead and prosecuted him, he probably would have been convicted.
And forgive me, Professor Gall, you could say the same thing about Mark Rich, who was pardoned by Bill Clinton, too.
Yes, he was pardoned before he had been convicted of anything. And so anytime a president pardons someone, especially if they're pardoning them preemptively before they've even been convicted of something, you can say they are taking someone who's guilty and putting them above the law. That's what preemptive pardons do. We give the president that power, and if he abuses it, the remedy isn't to say that the pardon is invalid. It's to say that the president can be impeached and maybe prosecuted himself.
Yeah, I'm looking at a comment from a listener named Skip who says, I think Gerald Ford's pardon of Richard Nixon is a good place to start, but Nixon was convicted of no crime, so there was really nothing to pardon. He was pardoned prophylactically.
Yes, and again, I think it's important to remember that the president does not have to say this person is guilty, but I'm forgiving him. The president can also say this person is not guilty, or this person, whatever they did, should not be prosecuted. It can be used in that way too. President Ford paid a political price. I think it's why he lost the election in 1976. It cost him the election. That's the way pardons are supposed to work. The president is given this power because he's politically accountable. And if he says, well, I think this is the right thing to do, and the voters can say what they have to say about it, and then the voters do, that's the way the system is supposed to work. Nixon goes free, but Ford loses the election. That's the mechanism that the framers of the Constitution set up.
And again, Brian Kalt is professor of law at Michigan State and author of Constitutional Cliffhangers, A Legal Guide for Presidents and Their Enemies. Let's hear from more of our listeners. Let's go next to you. Mary Ellen, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. 2 points. I wanted to know if anybody is working on guidelines for the future, because right now, everybody, no matter whether you're left or the right, agrees it's a mess, and we're running amok. And my concern is about guidelines that be put into place so we can avoid putting an unqualified person in the presidency to cause this again.
All right. I thank you for that suggestion and appreciate your giving it to us. I want to go right to another caller, and that's Eric. Eric, join us. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello, Michael. I guess my comments would be a little bit off the beaten path here, but I mean, I just look at the media. I mean, when I say the media, I mean CNN and other reporters out there that are really out to get Trump. I mean, I understand he's not perfect. I didn't vote for him, but at this point, he's been voted in. I think the obsession with trying to get him impeached at this point, even talking about impeachment without really thinking about the consequences of what could happen if he does get impeached, really it supersedes what is going on at this point. I mean, we forget that half the people, or more than half the people, support the guy. Nobody talks about those people, brings those opinions out. I listen to CNBC sometimes, the business station. A lot of CEOs love Trump because basically he's on pro-business agendas at this point. A lot of things he's doing are positive. Nobody seems to bring anything up. Everybody's obsessed with just bringing him down, getting him. I mean, Obama wasn't perfect. Clinton's not perfect. What do we want, a perfect president out there with nothing behind him? I mean, what's going on here? Can't we look at the consequences of an impeachment and looking at that's not really something that's responsible and maybe that's not the best interest of this country?
All
We're
right.
insulting our president in front of the world and making fun of us. This is ridiculous.
I'm glad you weighed in. I thank you for that call, getting editorial comments from listeners. And let's hear next from Joe, who joins us from Las Vegas. Joe, go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling because Jared Kushner signed a form that
that is prosecuted, that can be prosecuted. The first form said he had zero contacts with the Russians. The second one said 100 contacts or more. I didn't personally see it. The next one, it had to be amended to add the latest meeting. And are any of those, can those be criminally prosecuted? Because at this point, hasn't he broken the law?
Yeah, let me go again to you on this, Josh Meyer.
I think you could probably argue that laws were broken here. Mistakes were made, as they say. But I think a lot of it has to, you really have to find, it goes to intent, whether somebody intentionally meant to deceive. So I don't know if anybody has actually been charged criminally for omissions on such disclosure forms. But I think the bigger question is one of administrative remedies, including losing your security clearance and so forth, but also investigating it. I mean, at this point, the special counsel, Robert Mueller, it almost seems like he could have a staff of 900 people who could be kept busy looking at all the different tendrils of this story. But so I don't know if anybody's going to look into that or not, but it does. It to me, it's very. It raises a lot of questions about what else do we not know about Kushner. I think that the same is the case with the Attorney General of the United States, Sessions, who, if the Washington Post story is true, and nobody has come out and said that it isn't, that he also really can't be trusted with being fully with full disclosure of everything, because he has a track record now of not doing that. So it seems like we're sort of still in the early stages of all of these different threads of the story. So
the information in the Washington Post came supposedly from intelligence agencies, which Trump has called the enemy, and so you have that whole paradox weighing in here as well. And I want to also mention here, and thank you, Josh, for your thoughts, there's a new communications director I've alluded to before, Anthony Scaramucci, replacing Sean Spicer. And he was speaking to CNN's Jake Tapper just yesterday about the Russia investigation. And let's hear a clip in which he cites an anonymous source to back up his argument, which he then reveals when pressed by Tapper.
Somebody said to me yesterday, I won't tell you who, that if the Russians actually hacked this situation and spilled out those emails, you would have never seen it. You would have never had any evidence of them, meaning that they're super confident in their deception skills and hacking. My point is, all of the information isn't on the table yet.
I don't know who this anonymous person is that said that if the Russians had actually done it, we wouldn't have been able to detect it. But
how about it was the president, Jake?
Okay, it's the consensus of the intelligence community.
He called me from Air Force One.
Well, Josh Meyer, there's a sourcing.
Yeah. Well, I think that clears everything up. I think we can move on now. Kidding, of course. Somebody, again, at the Aspen Security Forum, said that they're getting the impression that this is all some sort of reality show, at least that the White House is constructing it as such, and that, sometimes they just need a new an exciting character to take the attention away from something else, and Mooch, as he's called, might be that person. But that's just flatly untrue. I mean, I think that the Russians are good at cyber, active measures, but the U.S. government is probably the best in the world at determining them, and there are always going to be some sort of signatures and forensic footprints that you can find, to sort of backtrack in a lot of these things. And it's I'm fairly positive now, given what I know, that the U.S. government was actually probably in the networks, the Russian networks, and looking at exactly what they were doing, probably down to the computers that were doing this kind of work. But I think, one thing that, I would want to sort of say before we go is, he's quoting as his source, the president of the United States, but what was most remarkable to me about the Aspen Security Forum was hearing Brennan, former CIA Director Brennan, and former DNI Director Clapper spend an hour in which they just really tore into the president on a number of levels. I mean, I had never seen anything like that. It was just amazing to behold the level of seething anger by these two, top guys, at the president, especially for impugning the the ability, but also the character of the intelligence community on this things, just like what he said that he told Scaramucci, which is, you know, that he just doesn't believe the U.S. intelligence community. He would apparently rather believe the Russian government than our own 17 intelligence agencies. But, you know, if Scaramucci is using President Trump as his source on the intricacies of cyber warfare and who can catch who doing what, you know, I'm not sure that he's, you know, really as well versed in it as he should be.
Again, Josh Meyer, senior investigative reporter for Politico. Let me just end with, if I may, a question for you, Brian Call. We got seconds left here, but James wants to know, who has or where is the definitive answer to the presidential pardon myself question? When and where will this be decided?
If the president pardons himself, if they go ahead and try to prosecute him anyway, then the court will have to decide. Until that happens, there is no answer other than opinions of people like me.
Well, we will continue to get the opinions and continue to monitor these stories. I want to thank Brian Call. Thanks, Josh Meyer. Thanks, Jennifer Epstein, who joined us earlier. And thank you, our listeners, because we would not be here without you. And we are here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. When we return on Forum, we're going to talk about the sequel to Inconvenient Truth. New Al Gore film is out there. We're going to talk to the filmmakers and the former Vice President Al Gore himself. Stay tuned for that. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.